some measure of confidence that God is in control. Because I think you already see this in the media at the moment, the different papers supporting different lines. This is the most cataclysmic election ever. This is the destiny of the nation.
Yes.
This is the crucial moment. I think that's all hype. It's all part of the kind of the way that adversarial politics work. And I think as Christians, we need to debunk that.
Yeah, we've got a better story than that, haven't we? Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. This is a special edition of In the News. It's our election special, and I'm joined by two of the political heavyweights here at FIEC Towers. I'm sitting in the middle like the Speaker of the House of Commons and making no comment about political affiliations, but on my left...
On the right.
I'm saying nothing. You said that. Is Justin Gill, our IT manager. And on my right, John Stevens, our national director. Hello, folks.
Hi, Adrian.
We all love a bit of politics, don't we?
I'm really hoping that on this, I'm not going to be drowned by the rain. And nobody's going to be playing Things Can Only Get Better, drowning out what we have to say.
We're on the bottom floor of a two-floor building. If you're drowned by the rain, there are bigger problems than what happens to your jumper. We're here to talk about the general election, and especially, we're going to get there eventually, how we as leaders pastor through this particular period. So that's very important. It's called for the 4th of July. If you don't know, I'm sure you do know, there's going to be a general election on the 4th of July, which just happens to be Scottish holidays, happens to be my holiday as well. So I'll be submitting my postal vote.
My wedding anniversary.
And so many questions, John. You got married on Independence Day.
My wife did ask me if she should volunteer to be a poll clerk for the elections on the 4th of July, but we probably thought that wasn't the
there
best
you
thing
are.
To do.
There you are. I've got a number of different headings. My first heading begins with P, for praise, because we groan a lot about our politicians, we moan about the things we don't like, and actually a general election gives us cause to do that, because we express our opinions perhaps more openly. But actually, Justin, we need to be full of praise, don't we, for a system which is fair, which is transparent, which is actually full of integrity. Obviously, there are things that go wrong. There are, you know, we've heard about the, we were thinking a bit earlier on about contaminated blood and the scandal all around that. So there are the things come up. But just the other day, I was in a different prayer meeting thinking about India. And it was pointed out to me that the Lok Sabha, which is the Indian parliament, about the same size as our parliament, there are 177 MPs who are currently either have been found guilty of or are being investigated for serious crimes, which means murder, sexual assault against the person. So, you know, without wanting to sort of cast aspersions on other systems, let's look at ours. We should be very grateful for it, shouldn't we?
We definitely need to, and especially need to appreciate the MPs and the people who compete, you know, whether they get elected or not. You know, they put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah.
Right. We do have a duty to judge them on their integrity and their past. I think that does speak volumes when you're selecting somebody voting for somebody. But again, comparing it to other countries, India is a massive country. You got to realize that. Yeah. Like, and again, the magnitude of that country and the magnitude of population, and then the elections that happen over like weeks or something like that. It's not just
is there currently going on at the moment, aren't
So it's a logistic nightmare as well. So at the same time, the integrity and the past of that candidate really matters. And quite often we look at, as Christians, the ethical side of things, ethical side of the personality and the past. These things do matter. Whichever party do you vote for, I think these are very important things to think about.
We'll come back to that in a moment. Just think about the kind of the general scene and how, as Christians, we should be thankful for it. Just what does the Bible say into that situation? How does the Bible guide us there?
Well, I think the Bible reminds us that civil government is established by God for the good of people. Actually, it's a good thing to have good rule. In the Old Testament, a good thing to have a good righteous king who was ruling over the people. Even in the kind of New Testament, it talks about the kind of the good role of government, even speaking about the sort of rule of the Roman emperors, which was in many ways had elements of abuse as part of that, but yet still a maintenance of order. If you don't have some kind of government, you end up with anarchy, which is terrible. You want to look at the worst places in the world to live, and they're the places with civil wars.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we can be immensely grateful that we do have a government that maintains order. Mm. I think that that is a good gift from God that we shouldn't take for granted. I think it's a good gift from God that we have a government that's accountable. Mm. So you know, democracy itself, the fact that the people have the opportunity to be able to express their opinion and in a sense hold their governors and rulers to account. To some extent, again, you do get that in the Old Testament, in the Bible, that the king, to some extent, has to have the consent and the support of the people and the tribes. Certainly, I mean, the pattern of democracy is found in the New Testament in the life of the early church, which people voted for the appointment of leaders and elders. I would say that actually democracy, as we have it, owes an awful lot to the history of...
Where do you see that? You don't see that in the New Testament. And,
oh, yeah. I mean, I think the language of appointment of elders, if you look at your subnotes in the Bible, the word appoint is also the word elect.
Okay.
And it seems to be the case that actually what's going on there is the congregation is exercising a vote to recognize people of character to be leaders. Mm. Certainly the church comes together to make decisions like church discipline, which are kind of removing somebody from
membership. You see that in 1 Corinthians, don't you?
So I do think a representative democracy in which everybody has a vote has some deeply rooted Christian sort of origins, and it's a right restraint on power. And suddenly our politicians are faced with having to speak to the people, make their promises to them, and they are dependent on what the people choose. And I think in terms of comparison with world history and lots of places around the world, we do have a government and a state that's remarkably free of corruption.
Indeed.
We enjoy often levels of justice and fairness that are not perfect. Everybody knows they're not perfect, but compared to what many states have experienced in history, are certainly at the very top end.
Practically perfect
of what is enjoyed
in
this world.
Yeah. I think that's exactly right.
And I think sometimes we as Christians fail to appreciate that. We get so taken up with all the things that we think are wrong, the things that could have been done better. And actually politics is adversarial. The politicians themselves encourage that in the way that they speak about each other in extreme terms. I think as Christians, we've just got to be very careful not to fall into that and be grateful for the politicians that we have, particularly when it's clear that evangelical Christians support different political parties and take different views on a whole variety of issues.
So praise God. Praise God. And actually, leaders, if you're listening, as you help churches think about these issues, as you help churches get ready for a general election, perhaps your church is actually being used for a polling station, but certainly as you get ready to help people vote, let's not lose sight of just thankfulness to God, really, for what's a,
definitely.
What's a good system.
Can I come on in that one? Actually, so
I
just,
don't know. It depends what you're going to say, Justin.
Well, you know I'm biased, so I'm going to declare my bias. Oh, that's better to do that now rather than like later on it comes very obvious. Right. But going forward, just to say that the voting turnout is very important in all this. I think the 2019 turnout, voting turnout was 67.3% in the UK. But just thinking as comparing it to highest turnout around the world is Australia.
Yes, where it's compulsory to vote in Australia.
Exactly. So this points towards how seriously as Christians we take, not just just general public, you know, non-Christians, but as Christians, we take how important it is to vote or how seriously we take it. So the thing is, if it's not compulsory, it's just voluntary practice that we're not bothered about it, right? Should we be bothered about it? Yes. Otherwise, our voices will be left out of democratic process.
So it's a privilege, isn't it? It's a privilege to vote.
I mean, the EAA, Evangelical Alliance, recently did a survey about politics and the engagement of evangelicals with politics. What's quite striking is how engaged evangelicals are with politics. So you're right. Those were the kind of turnout figures for the last election. The EAA survey suggests that 93% of evangelicals will vote, so much higher than
the national
average. Yeah. They obviously care about those issues. Yep. And actually 10% of evangelicals belong to political parties. Mm-hmm. So they're exercising influence, not just in the vote, but actually in the whole process of the formation of party policy and the selection of party candidates. Mm-hmm. So as a whole, and that's far higher than the percentage of the ordinary population who are involved in politics. Mm-hmm. So it seems that evangelical Christians take politics seriously in terms of their engagement at multiple levels.
Good. Now, we are just going to set the tone for this podcast. We're going to have a little quiz. All right. So just reaching down here. For those who aren't watching, you need a little buzzer. Your buzzer. Just try that out. Okay, that's Justin. John, you can have that. This is from my grandchildren's music box.
Thank you.
So you just have to tap that, John. Just Okay, that's John. That's yours. Okay, so there are a number of little questions here. We're going to see who's going to win an overall majority. Okay, so are you ready for the first question? And we're going to start easy. How many MPs? How many MPs are there?
Oh, it's 164.
That's a majority.
656?
650.
Not far.
See, yes. I don't know what country you're living in.
No, sorry, 650. I was thinking, okay.
Yeah, 650, just slightly more than there are FIAC churches, 644. How many Welsh MPs are there? I'll give it to you within the knockout. Yes.
It's actually going down this time. They've reduced the number of constituencies. Yes. It's going to be about 37.
32. I'll give you that, okay. I think. Oh, well, how many seats are there, physical seats, in the House of Commons chamber?
Oh, they're a lot less, I think. They just sit very tight together. I think they're around, last time when I was there watching it live.
What's your guess, Justin? Come on.
I think
quick fire.
500.
There are 427.
But no seats, no one gets they're benches.
Oh,
there you go.
Are there less seats or have politicians got bigger?
There are two members of the cabinet who do not need to be re-elected. One is David Cameron, who is the foreign secretary. Who is the other?
The speaker?
No, member of the cabinet.
It'll be the
cabinet.
Leader of the Conservatives in the House of Lords, but I can't remember what name she okay. is. I think it's she, use, isn't
you,
it?
It's not. Oh. You have to use your little thing. Okay. It's Lord True.
Lord True.
Who is the Lord Privy Seal, which makes it sound as though he's in charge of locking up the toilets, but he is the leader in the House of Lords. That's okay. Who is the longest serving? You're doing very poorly, by the way, at the moment, but never mind. There's 5 weeks to the general election. Who is the longest serving member of the House of Commons who is also standing for re-election?
David Davis?
It is Peter Bottomley.
Oh, sorry, I should have done that.
He's the father of the house.
He is, and he's also recently standing, so that's good news. Which MP has changed sides in history? It's not current serving MP. Which MP has changed sides the most? Yes.
Pretty much like to be Winston Churchill.
It is Winston Churchill. Started off as a conservative, became a liberal, then was an independent, then was a constitutionalist, then became a conservative again. So it is Winston Churchill. Right, who can vote? These are yes and no's. Okay, so you've got to be quick with your little rattles things. Okay, so resident in the UK, an Irish citizen.
Yes.
They can vote. That is correct. Okay. Resident in the UK, a French citizen.
No, not in a general election.
That is true, but in a local election, yes. Resident in the UK, an Australian citizen.
Yes.
Yes. Commonwealth citizens.
Commonwealth
citizens and Irish citizens, if they're resident in the UK, can vote. That is correct. A peer of the realm.
No, I don't think they can't.
Bang your thing,
sorry,
John. No, okay.
They can't vote.
A sitting peer cannot vote. A hereditary peer who is not in the House of Lords may vote. Okay. Lord Spiritual, that is a bishop in the House of Lords, can they vote?
I think they probably can.
They can, but they choose not to, apparently. A serving prisoner?
No, because the civil servant, they can't be biased.
Not a civil servant, sorry, a serving prisoner.
You may think that
civil servants and serving prisoners, there is a link between them. But
I actually don't know the answer, but I think that was an argument with the European Court of Human Rights.
It was, yeah.
And I can't remember what was eventually
decided. The answer is prisoners who are in jail cannot vote unless they are in jail for contempt of court or non-payment of fines, in which case they can.
Oh.
So there we are.
Okay.
An overseas resident who is a British subject.
Yes.
They can, and they vote in their last registered place. Basically, anybody who's on the electoral roll. Are you on the electoral roll?
I am on the electoral roll.
Are you on the electoral roll, Justin?
Yes.
And I am too, so all three of us can vote.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. You were about to add another category, were you?
No. I was just about to object that my thing requires a two-handed movement, which gives Justin an automatic advantage.
You'll be glad to know that, John, you won that. You won that quiz, and in fact you had a landslide victory. You have obtained a majority of 144, which enables you to basically do anything you want. Let's just talk about the polls very briefly. I mean, it looks at the moment, doesn't it, that Labour, from most of the polls, are going to win a landslide. Do we believe that? Is that right? Quick answer from each of you.
John, you go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know, isn't it? I mean, there's evidence of history would suggest that a gap that's big is unlikely to be closed. But who knows? There are a lot of people who haven't made up their mind. Again, EA survey says 25% of evangelicals haven't made up their mind. I think an election campaign puts people into the public eye. It forces them to answer questions. There's no doubt that there seems to be a general public dissatisfaction with the governing party at the moment. But inevitably, in an election, will put others into the frame. Yeah. Do they genuinely have better ideas? So I think one can't rule out that it's going to narrow very considerably. Yeah. One thinks about the collapse of the major lead that Theresa May had in 2017.
Yeah, 17 points, I think, wasn't it?
I think it's not a completely done deal as to where it will end. There's also a phenomenon of people who are not necessarily honest in polls about who they're going to vote for. So the statistics may be slightly skewed by people's unwillingness to identify with a party that is perceived as being unpopular. But most experts would say that this is such a big lead that it would be extraordinary for it to be able to be overcome. Yeah. Although there's a greater likelihood because of all of the difficulties in Scotland, the possibility of tactical voting in a variety of ways, that some kind of hung parliament is also a possible outcome. So I think it's everything to play for.
And our political system is such that it's quite difficult, isn't it, to predict?
And I would say that, the reason I pointed out the turnout is that it depends like how much turnout will be. Quite often it happens is that when there is a low turnout, it's either the extreme left or extreme right. They are very,
they're good at getting
people out.
They want to vote.
Who are really want to vote. But whereas the people in the middle, like probably us, I would consider myself. Well, yeah, so we kind of think that, okay, what's the point in voting? Right. Quite often people in the middle don't prioritize voting.
You think my vote doesn't make any difference? Or,
exactly. Yeah. So I think the challenge for the political parties is, again, on both Labour and Conservative and, you know, a few other parties, is that how to target people who are in the middle.
Let's get into the nitty-gritty and let's talk about policies. Now, John, I want to ask you about this. I think as a Christian, I find there's this tension all the time because there are some especially moral issues about life and how we live, where it's very easy to see what a Christian view might be on them. So you take something like abortion, for example, that some of these questions maybe around the edges, not so much, but, you know, in the center, they're very, very clear about what they should be. And there are others which seem to have no, you know, Christians can believe all kinds of things on them. So inevitably, we tend to gravitate, don't we, towards the kind of the touchstone issues, I guess you would say. How do we navigate that? Is that the right thing to do as Christians, to focus on those big kind of moral issues where we think the gospel has a, you know, something to say, or the scriptures have something to say? Or do we need to think about politics a bit more broadly? And if so, how do we do that?
I think that's a massive challenge. It seems to me that one of the chief goals of government is to restrain evil and wickedness.
Yeah.
And so therefore that ought to be borne in mind in terms of how we evaluate politicians.
Yep.
I think it's worth saying though that evil and wickedness covers in a whole variety of different things. Mm. So that might be harm to individuals, that might be economic injustice, which causes hardship to certain groups and communities. So exactly what you think evil is, even the Bible has a holistic sense of what evil is. It seems to me politics and choosing a government is all about seeking what is going to be best in the common good overall. But I think in Britain in particular, on many of these issues, it's not as sharp as it might be in other situations, because actually most of our main parties hold to pretty similar views.
For example?
Well, if you were to look at abortion, actually the parties are not very far apart in terms of what they believe in relation to abortion.
Very sad,
law. Yeah. I suspect they're not particularly far apart on issues like assisted suicide. They're not particularly far apart in terms of issues like conversion therapy. So it's not as if there are actually stark moral choices between the political parties and their platforms. And I think we will find that none of the parties is putting forward what you might call a Christian manifesto that is shaped by a commitment to the moral issues that Christians generally think are most important to them. So actually, that's probably not on the table. And most people are not facing a very stark choice between two parties that are offering diametrically opposed.
It's not as binary as the States, for example.
Indeed. But having said that, actually individual politicians in constituencies may have different views on those things. Right. In British politics, issues like abortion are treated as conscience issues on which MPs are free to vote as they wish. And that means to say there are MPs who have very clear views on those issues and will vote in line with those issues.
So we should be asking those questions.
So there's actually a difference between supporting individual MPs and supporting parties and their policies. And I think actually navigating that challenge of what decision are we making about who we support, there is actually that challenge of, do I go with the policies of the party as a whole, or do I go with the character and the particular opinions of the MP in
my constituency? And then how do I rank those anyway? Absolutely. So I could end up setting a particular moral issue, let's just sort of desensitize, it could be anything, couldn't it? A particular moral issue against perhaps a political issue, and trying to weigh up in my own mind what's the relative weight of those, and coming to a different conclusion from you.
So, I mean, this is no political bias on this, but imagine you have a constituency in which you have a Labour politician who is pro-life and a Conservative politician who is pro-abortion.
Yes.
And you are thinking, who do I vote for? You might, if you're a natural conservative, you might say, well, actually, what I want is somebody in Parliament who's going to speak for the cause that I believe in. Yep. And you might therefore think, I want that person to be there because I know they will speak about something that's really important to me, even if actually on other areas of their political agenda. And I think those are wisdom judgments that we have to make before God, assessing all of the criteria. There's this balance between the overall political platform that's being put forward and the individual. Yeah. And we have to remember that in our system, our MPs are not delegates, they're representatives.
Yes.
Yeah. We're basically choosing people to speak on our behalf, which I think means we have a sort of a more urgent need to consider the character and the beliefs
which is what you were saying earlier, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, saying that, it's not easy, you know, as like going by the party line or just taking their own line. But one thing that I want to just quote somebody here, you might have come across a political commentator, he does a political satire shows and stuff, Bill Maher from US. And recently,
I have not.
Okay, and I'm sure people would. And recently, he invited Piers Morgan to his show. So they were talking about politics, and it's in the context of U.S. and Canada. So his famous quote that he used in that is, "They say in politics, liberals are the gas pedal, and the conservatives are the brakes. And I am generally with the gas pedal, but not if we are driving off a cliff." I think this is coming from somebody who used to be a very liberal guy, right? You can see his history. He was very liberal in his thoughts and ideas and stuff. But he's coming to a conclusion that as a nation, US and specifically Canada, got to a point where liberals are pushing us off the cliff. And I think that's where, as a nation, voting collectively as Christians and thinking that as a nation where we are heading becomes very important. Because if, as I think, is if liberals are going to push us off the cliff, we need to vote the way that our conviction leads us, which in my case is as conservative.
Okay. Other views are available.
I think I would say it's slightly more complicated than that, because I think actually there is a realignment going on in politics at the moment in which liberalism and conservatism on economic issues and social issues, it's not a straightforward divide across the parties. So, for example, one of the key things that's changed within the Conservative Party over the past couple of decades is a kind of an individualistic liberal moral view has become very common within the party itself. I think that it's not totally straightforward to identify that with particular kind of political parties. And you know, one of the reasons for so much disappointment in politics at the moment is people who perhaps wanted a more restraining agenda have felt that governments have not delivered that. So I think the split between liberal individualism and a more collective traditionalism actually cuts across party lines a little bit more than it perhaps has done kind of in the past. And I think one of the unknowns in British politics is exactly how these realignments are going to develop in this election and then possibly in subsequent elections.
Okay. I want you to help me here. So I'm going to imagine, I'm your pastor, right? I want you to imagine that. And Justin, you're going to play the role of a church member. And John, you're going to play the part of a trusted friend wise counselor. How am I going to pastor the church through these next few weeks? Right, I've got people who are going to come to. I'm hearing I've got people who are going to come to different, settled, thought through opinions that they'll perhaps hold quite strongly. Mm-hmm. I've got opinions of my own. Am I, you know, should I be saying anything about those? How do I help people vote and think about the general election wisely? So first of all, let's go with you, John, my trusted advisor here, who's looking in from the outside, saying, Pastor Adrian, you need to be thinking about this and this and this. What needs to be on my piece of paper?
I would say, as a pastor leading a church, given that on lots of the issues, making the judgment between different political parties is not going to be so obviously clear-cut that one is right and one is not. Recognition that that is a wisdom call that people have got to make. I would want to urge a pastor to be helping people to make a wisdom judgment and be setting that before them. I think the unity of the church in the long run means that we've got to avoid the danger of being overly politically partisan in what we teach and how we teach it, that we've got to avoid the danger of giving people the impression that a Christian will obviously come to a particular conclusion. I mean, the EA survey, again, makes very clear that Christians are divided between the political parties. Yeah. There will be those voting Conservative, Labour, Lib Dem. They'll have a whole variety of different reasons why they vote. Yeah. So the top reasons for voting for parties were what they will do for the most needy in society, what their views are on Christian moral issues, and then thirdly, what is the least worst option of what is available. So those are the kinds of factors people will take into account. And I think that we need to not bind people's consciences and allow them to think through all of the issues and make their own judgments. I think we need, as pastors, to be particularly encouraging and teaching people that God is sovereign. We need people to have a strong sense of God's common grace, a strong conviction about certain truths about creation that in the end win out against whatever people might want to argue against it. In the end, you can't buck the way the world really is in the long run. So some measure of confidence that God is in control. Because I think you already see this in the media at the moment, the different papers supporting different lines. This is the most cataclysmic election ever. This is the destiny of the nation. Yes. This is the crucial moment. I think that's all hype. It's all part of the kind of the way that adversarial politics work. And I think as Christians, we need to debunk that.
Yeah, we've got a better story than that, haven't we? What about as a church member? What are you looking for from your pastor,
right,
Justin?
First thing that I would suggest that whoever you vote for, do it very prayerfully. Pray for your candidate, pray for what your convictions are. And again, the hype that's going to be created in the media, you can easily get carried away with that. I do quite often, you know, Twitter and all that stuff is quite draining, is quite often. So if you do get into involved like those sort of issues. And secondly, thinking, you know, as John earlier said, the kind of issues that we vote for is, in my opinion, that I would say that, like, okay, you know, looking at if that person is socially conservative or economically conservative. I think this will also be helpful for people to think about themselves. It's like, where do you stand? Where do your convictions stand? In terms of, quite often people find themselves like their judgment is led by the economy and or is it because of the social issues in the society, or all those things are really impacting them personally, or are they thinking of like wider as a society? So these sort of things would be in my advice to think about, well, that person, specifically that person's opinion, where it's coming from. But again, above all, do it very prayerfully.
Yeah. So giving some time over in the prayer meeting, praying for it in the service. I mean, we're told to pray for governments anyway, but this is a particular moment to pray for not just governments, but for the process. I think that's a good thing to be doing, isn't it? Should I, as a leader, be revealing what I think, how I'm going to vote? What do you think, John?
I think you've got to exercise a high measure of discernment on that. Yeah. I don't think I would be announcing it publicly in church. I think as leaders, we are very wise to play our cards close to our chests because we don't want to exercise favoritism. We don't want to give people the impression that we view them differently because of what political views they might have. So I think there's a measure of caution. If somebody wants to ask the question personally, I think it depends on who they are and what they're likely to do with that information. Is it a genuine question, or are they wanting to gain that information to be used in some way? I think we need to be able to speak even-handedly about the different parties. We need to, in a sense, try to speak the best of whatever others might think, even if they're not those that we would agree with. I think in our praying, we need to be very careful that our prayer isn't a coded support from a particular group.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even how we pray, again, I think some of the things we were talking about, thanking God for the government that we have, asking that God would preserve the peace that we enjoy, praying that leaders would be raised up who would fulfill their responsibility, praying that we would be granted wisdom as we exercise that choice. So prayer can be a carefully coded way of making a party political broadcast. And I think we've got to be very careful that we don't do that.
But what about if there's an evangelical standing? So let's say, here we are in Harbour District, we're all in Harbour District. Let's say we've got five candidates standing and one of them is we know is an evangelical. Does that trump everything else? Does that kind of beat everything else? Would we vote for them despite, you know?
That's a very American way of doing things. And I don't want to diss American way of doing things, but I'm glad we are not America.
Yeah.
Right. And in a way that I will openly say that even my wife doesn't tell me who she's voting for. So she probably doesn't trust me with that information. But that's a separate story.
Yes.
But yeah, it's good to, like, you know, keep something personal. We don't need to publicly share those things.
It's a secret ballot.
It's a secret ballot. Yeah. And again, I've made it very clear, you know, where I stand, and I can go down to policy by policy why I've made this decision. There are certain things that I don't agree with the Conservative Party, but end of the day, I've made a decision. Overall, I think my political ideology aligned with Conservative Party. So yeah, this is a decision that I've made. Okay. But yeah, there are certain things that I don't like about it. Yes, I would be vocal about it, but that's the way it is. That's the way I think we need to think about it.
So Christian, does that trump everything else?
Well, not necessarily trumps everything else. Actually, again, I would think it's fairly complicated to think through. So I've never had an evangelical Christian standing in a constituency that I've been voting in, so I've never quite had that exact scenario. I think it means also weighing up what your vote means in your constituency. So because we've got a first-past-the-post system, there is a sense in which actually our individual votes may not make the difference that we might think they might make. So you could.
Is it okay to vote tactically then, do you think?
I think absolutely. Yeah. You know, you may be voting in a constituency in which you've got an evangelical Christian who, because of the party they're with, are almost certainly going to lose. Mm. Do you vote for them in order to show your support for them? In another situation, you might be in a constituency in which the evangelical Christian is of a party that you don't necessarily support, but has a realistic chance of winning, at which point your vote suddenly becomes that much more significant. And then the question becomes, do I really want another evangelical voice in Parliament? That might be offended on whether I think a particular party is very likely to win the election overall. So I think making that judgment as to what difference my vote will make in relation to this particular individual, I think is probably the kind of thing that we need to weigh up. At a personal level, I certainly could conceive that in a situation I would vote for an evangelical Christian of a different party because I respect their integrity and how they're likely to exercise their judgment across a range of things over somebody who's in a party that I might more naturally philosophically agree with.
Yeah.
And actually, I could find myself in a constituency in which the party I most philosophically disagree with, I think the particular candidate is a charlatan or somebody who's an ambitious self-promoter, someone who's not going to really care for the constituency in the way that I think. Again, the mere fact that they're from the party that I might most naturally identify with doesn't mean that I think that they're going to be the best person to be representing in the House of Commons. So I think issues of character and integrity are hugely important.
So let me sum up. We're slightly out of time. So let me just sum up. What are we encouraging leaders to do? We're encouraging them to help their folk be confident in the sovereignty of God, prayerful in terms of their own decision-making and the outcome of the election, and thoughtful in terms of the decisions they're making, that don't just assume, you know, because I've always supported this party or always supported that person. You know, think about the issues, look at the policies, think about them, you know, in a broad Christian way. There's some really helpful material around, isn't there, from all kinds of Christian groups. We'll put some links in the podcast notes. So EA have produced some stuff, CARE have produced some stuff, Christian Institute, Christian Concern, lots of different links. We'll put those in. Do follow those through, perhaps with a group that you normally support as a church or where you kind of, you know, and you trust, to find out a bit more. No doubt we'll be coming back to this again and again. But just as a starter, thank you very much, guys. Really helpful. I'm not going to ask you for any predictions or anything like that. It's just a helpful place to start.
It's too early.
And let's be praying for the outcome of the general election in the UK. Thanks very much for joining us for this election special. We need a little note, a little sort of tune to go over it or something, don't we? Right, there we are. Election special independence. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you again soon.